in the DMV. You know we listening to that People Power Radio, WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice. Let's go.
Welcome to Africa Now. Today's show features DRC, peace agreement, sports washing, minerals, and more. Africa Now is next. Welcome to the show. I'm Weezy Muntali. The music in the background is African Herbs by Abdullah Ibrahim, and we played that commemorating his birthday, which was on October 9. First, I just want to thank the listeners for supporting Don't Forget the Blues with Clarence the Bluesman Turner today during our fall pledge drive. Be in solidarity with WPFW and Africa Now today, and our goal for this hour is $600. And we can make that goal by calling 1-800-222-9739, or you can go to the Donate Now button at the WPFWFM.org website and scroll down to Africa Now. And you can also make your pledge at the Cash App, which is the $WPFWFM. And we can surely reach the goal and possibly go beyond with your support. The theme of WPFW's Fall Pledge Drive, which is from October 12 to the 25th, is music, memory, and social justice. WPFW has offered inspiring music, poignant stories, and critical journalism for over 48 years, whether reminiscing while hearing Nina Simone or learning about the harm done due to gross global inequity. WPFW has been the soundtrack for moments of revelation, joy, sadness, and resistance. It is your generosity that allows us to continue this tradition of expansive, emancipatory excellence in community radio. We ask you to once again be in solidarity with WPFW during our fall pledge drive today by donating at WPFWFM.org or by calling 800-222-9739. And you can also go to our Cash App, which is the $WPFWFM, to reach our goal of $600 and hopefully go beyond that goal. There's only one WPFW and only one you, the listener, who is committed to keeping independent music and message available to the people. Your generosity sustains and challenges us to build a better world, one broadcast at a time. Be in solidarity with WPFW and Africa Now today. In the context of WPFW's Fall Pledge Drive theme, today the show focuses on the Democratic Republic of the Congo, DRC. Due to the continued external destabilization of the country, the DRC has nearly 7 million people who have been displaced, and since the late 1990s, over 6 million have been killed in the country due to the conflict. Earlier this year, we saw the Rwandan-backed armed group M23 control towns in the eastern part of the DRC. On June 27, DRC and Rwanda formally signed the Washington Agreement in Washington, D.C., U.S., and on July 19, the two parties signed the Doha Declaration of Principles in Doha, Qatar, to end the conflict in eastern DRC. But unfortunately, so far, peace has not been sustained. Yesterday, I had a conversation with Maurice Carney, Executive Director of Friends of the Congo, in which he dissected the peace agreement and the missing issue of justice for Congolese people in the agreement. The conversation also focused on the role of the continued neo-colonial role of multinational corporations and countries who are exploiting the DRC's vast resources, unpacking sports washing in the context of the conflict in the DRC, and more. Here is the conversation. Maurice Carney, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be back, Wiza.
It's always good to talk to you. Unfortunately, we're talking about some of the issues affecting negatively on the continent. And in this case, we're looking at DRC, but it's always a pleasure to talk to you. And particularly as we're in the midst of our pledge drive as well here in Africa now. And wanted to start talking about the subject matter, but looking at the annual meetings of the World Bank and IMF that are taking place in Washington, D.C. as we speak. What do they mean for the Democratic Republic of the Congo, the DRC?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because the DRC is front and center at these meetings. There's a special meeting that's happening today. They're called the Partnership for Economic Growth and Job Creation, where you have the U.S., the U.K., and Africa Business Council focusing on the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And you have a number of ministers from the DRC who are here to discuss trade, mineral deals, private sector opportunities, a range of investment possibilities around the DRC. And mind you, this is in the context of a deal that's on the table between the president of the DRC, Felix Tshisekedi, and the Trump administration, the minerals for security deal, for lack of a better term. So the DRC is open for business. Unfortunately, what we're seeing is that it's an exchange among elites. The local elites are engaged in discussions, deals, talks with global elites, likes of President Trump and billionaire class folks like Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos and Michael Bloomberg. And what's missing from the equation, big missing, is the local population, the people, those 70 million of Congo's 110 million population that live on less than $2.15 a day. It's hard to see how these investments that they're talking about are going to benefit the people when they're not even at the table. And the deals that are being struck have to do with concessions where they live. And what usually happens when you have mining companies in particular coming in to get access to the lithium, the copper, the cobalt, what have you, and they displace the local population. And the local population are promised housing and education and health and jobs, and almost never get any of those promises. So that's a huge, huge concern to see the hundreds of billions of dollars that are being discussed, and appears to be the same old model where profit is prioritized over the interests of the people.
Yeah, and actually something that you said, which kind of sparked my attention, which you said that DRC is open for business. One could say it was always open for business, but not the right kind of business.
Well, one could say that without a doubt. That's been its history. And I make that particular point because the current president of DRC has made an aggressive outreach to the Trump administration and to the billionaire class in the United States. So you have this, what Frantz Fanon called the national bourgeoisie, who are primarily concerned about their own interests and not really the interests of the people writ large. Part of that statement is the aggressive outreach on the part of the Congolese president, Felix Tshisekedi. And then the response on the part of the Trump administration and the billionaire class here. Because remember, for the past two decades or so, It's the landscape has been dominated by the Chinese. Even the one major American company that was in the Congo, Freeport-McMoRan, from Arizona, that had one of the largest copper cobalt mines in the country, in Africa, they sold their concession to the Chinese for some $2.5 billion or so to China Molybdenum. It's a combination, a confluence of interests between the elites in Kinshasa and the elites here in Washington that makes me say, yeah, they're open for business in a more aggressive fashion than has been the case in the past.
Yeah, and then of course the past has been the business operating continuously under the situation where we had armed conflict, which has been always been in the situation in the Congo since really since independence, when you've had these multinational corporations mining, but mysteriously still being able to get the resources in the midst of the conflict. That's why I said, oh, isn't it been always open for business, but the wrong kind of business? And as we're talking, we're just a few months after Rwanda and the DRC signed this agreement in Washington initially on June 27th, and then again, there was another, I guess the final signing was in Qatar in July 19th. If you could unpack that agreement, the peace agreement, which is ostensibly supposed to be ending the M23, which was backed by Rwanda. Everybody now agrees as Rwanda's has been pushing that armed forces. Has been destabilizing the eastern part of the Congo, which is resource rich like the rest of the country. But if you could unpack that ceasefire, is it really working?
There really isn't a ceasefire. There's a peace accord, the Washington Accord, that was signed in June 27th between the DRC and Rwanda, under the auspices of President Trump and Secretary of State Marco Rubio, with their point person for Africa, senior advisor Massad Boulos, and basically that deal met the interests of different players. It met the interests of Rwanda in the sense that Rwanda wasn't brought to account in any way, in the signing of the Washington Accord. For example, February 25th of this year, the UN Security Council voted unanimously 15-0 that in Resolution 2773, and one of the key tenets of that 15-0 unanimous vote on the part of the UN Security Council was for Rwanda to withdraw its troops from the Congo immediately without any preconditions and cease the support of the M23. And that was virtually absent in the deal that was signed. In addition to that, a part of the peace accord, they have what they call the regional economic integration component of it, where Rwanda would get investments from the U.S. To share energy, joint ventures for sharing of energy with the DRC. The illicit minerals that had been extracting out of Congo would now be licit, where Rwanda can process and refine those minerals and get investments for that. So Rwanda's interests were taken care of, Paul Kagame's interests. And then part of the reason for the deal was the onslaught by Rwanda's militia group, the M23. They've captured a large swath of eastern Congo, including the two largest cities, Goma and Bukavu. And what we see is that that militia group, the M23, backed by Rwanda, had threatened to go all the way to Kinshasa. And that's what led Tshisekedi to scurry to the U.S. to try and get support and present a minerals for security deal. So by Tshisekedi signing this deal that really doesn't accrue to the benefit of the Congolese people, he staunched the offensive and was able to ward off or mitigate the threat of his being overthrown. And then for the Trump administration, it's about to, they call it diplomacy of commerce, or I believe that's part of the term they use, where he's going in and leading with business and business interests. You mentioned earlier that the minerals keep flowing irrespective of the conflict. Well, when Rwanda back in 23 was moving across the east of the Congo, they captured they moved into an area called Walikale, and Walikale is rich in tin. And that's where you have a mining company, Alphamin, the U.S. mining company, that's there. And when the U.S. entered into the discussions to try and shepherd this peace deal, one of the requests on the part of Massad Boulos, the senior advisor for Africa under Trump, was for the M23 to back off of Walikale. Because when they captured Walikale, that forced the American company to shut down producing its production of tin. And Boulos went in and calling them to back off, and then the production began again. So that's a clear signal of how they're prioritizing business over peace or anything else. So Donald Trump and some of his business partners, a gentleman by the name of Gentry Beach out of Texas, who was his campaign finance co-chair, is eyeing a coltan mine that's been captured by the M23. So he's in the mix. And you have Eric Prince, the former owner of Blackwater. He's in the mix. And then, of course, you have the Bill Gates and the Bezos and the Bloombergs, who are eyeing and have actually signed a deal with the Congo to get access to lithium in the southeast of the country. So you have Tshisekedi, you have Trump in the billionaire class, you have Kagame, all getting what they want so far out of this deal. But what's missing, of course, is the Congolese people not getting any peace because the conflict has continued. People continue to be disappeared, executed. After the deal, Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch have reported on the executions that are taking place. Hundreds of people are being killed to the point where the UN Security Council had to call an emergency meeting about a month ago or so to address the crisis. So there has been no end to the violence and no justice and no inclusion on the part of Congolese civil society, local community. And so the tracks that have been laid on this deal do not bode well for the people of the Congo and delivering peace, justice, even any kind of security that the deal portends to bring.
Again, that's Maurice Carney. He is the executive director and co-founder of Friends of the Congo, and we're discussing the peace agreement which was recently signed between the Democratic Republic of the Congo, DRC, and Rwanda, and also looking at other issues in the DRC, like the issues concerning resources and sports washing and other issues, which we'll get into in our discussion today. And as you were saying, you had mentioned some of the players, some of the multinational players, particularly who have connections with the U.S. administration currently and other administrations in the past, individuals and organizations. And there's also other countries involved as well. We mentioned that the agreement that Rwanda and DRC have signed was initially signed. It took place in Washington D.C. and then in Doha and Qatar. If you could unpack for us Qatar's role, we sort of mentioned it a bit in a conversation on the DRC When the initial announcement of the peace agreement was mentioned in June, if you could unpack to us a bit more about Qatar's role, because most people don't realize how much Qatar has been playing within that region.
Yeah, Qatar has been very much engaged. In fact, in the heat of the battle, so to speak, when earlier this year, Qatar had invited President Tshisekedi and President Kagame to Doha for talks.
Again, welcome to Africa Now. I'm your host, Muizzo Muntali. And that was the voice you just heard was Maurice Carney, who is the executive director and co-founder of Friends of the Congo. And we're looking at the DRC today, the peace agreement, sports washing, minerals, and other issues. Also with me in the virtual studio is our program director, Katia Stitt. Hi, Katia.
Good afternoon, Weeza. Great to be with you, as always.
Great to hear your voice. One day we'll be in the physical studio.
Exactly. That's right. That's right. Absolutely. I shade of that. And you know, Weeza, we already have some folks, a person to thank who's gotten us started, which is great. We want to say thank you to Isabel Charles.
I think it's two people.
Isabel and Charles. Okay. Sorry about that, Isabel and Charles. Thank you so much for the pledge of support. And we also have another pledge that is not showing up on the screen here. So we only need $400. I say only. We know it's a rough time, so I should not say only. Qualify it like that. But we are in need of $400 to make the goal for this afternoon, and we have 39 minutes to do it. The number to call is 800-222-9739. And, you know, Muizzo Muntali and James Pope always produce such a fine program in Africa Now. I'm sure, if you're like myself, you've learned a lot, you've been educated, you've been inspired, you've been moved to action, all of those things coming through learning about the continent, as well as the African diaspora. And we thank them for their work, their research, in bringing us the voices that are so critical to African liberation, like the voice of Maurice Carney from Friends of the Congo in this conversation about sports washing, which is so very important in terms of how these entities cleanse themselves of human rights violations and crime. So, Muizzo, we thank you for your work. And those of you listening,
Thank you.
We ask you to be in solidarity with Muizzo and this fine work right now by calling 800-222-9739 or going online to WPFWFM.org. You can also use Cash App, which is $WPFWFM. And you can also text to donate, which is texting WPFW, I believe. I always get that wrong. To 801-801. But the way that we can see the screen and we love to announce thank yous is by either calling 800-222-9739 or going online to WPFWFM. $400 to go. Muizzo?
And people can also go to our Cash App, which is the $WPFWFM. Unfortunately, we won't be able to get the reports of the Cash App today, but we can thank you next week. We'll get the reports next week. And make sure in the memo line of the Cash App you write that it's for Africa Now for today. And I just want to, just want to acknowledge everybody who's been supporting us throughout the years. And we're able to provide this information, the information on the DRC. We've covered the DRC throughout really Africa Now's existence. And of course, this year we've done a number of shows because of all the things that are happening minute by minute in the DRC. And it's only because of a dedicated station of WPFW and also the community, which has demanded such programs. That's why we're able to do these programs, because of you. And also because of the mission of the station as the fall pledge drives theme says. It says music, memory, and social justice, which are very much the heart and soul of WPFW. All my colleagues here at WPFW, that's what we do every day. I don't know if you have any closing thoughts, Katia, before we go to the next segment with Maurice.
I just want to quickly encourage people again. I mean, there's nothing really, I feel like there's nothing more I can say, because the programming that you do, Muiza, the excellence in the production says it all, and the voices that you bring to the fore says it all. So be in solidarity again with Muiza Muntali and James Pope and the fine work of Africa Now. Right now, by calling 800-222-9739 or going online to WPFWFM.org. Again, $400 left, and we have 35 minutes. And we can do this together for folks. The African proverb is, many hands make light work, and certainly supporting Africa Now and WPFW are no exception.
Yes, and we're going to continue our conversation with Maurice Carney of Friends of the Congo, dissecting the peace agreement in Congo, sports washing, and minerals in the DRC.
To see if they could facilitate some kind of agreement between the two leaders. Of course, they have business interests in Rwanda and in Africa overall. And they've injected themselves in a way that an aspect of the peace deal that focuses on the M23, they're supposed to shepherd that part of the negotiations between the M23 and the Congolese government. And for the life of me, I don't know why the Congolese government agreed to that. If you look at the Washington deal, we did like a word search on it. Mind you, the M23, they've been occupying parts of Eastern Congo since 2022. Right, they've been the main driver that's been backed by Rwanda. But in this peace deal, they were only, in the document, they were only mentioned three times. And one of the three was in the glossary, where you have the FDLR was mentioned 40-something times because Rwanda had put that on the table. And I don't know why or how the Congolese government agreed with that. So the Congolese government agreed that they would have separate talks with an M23. And Qatar is facilitating those talks. To try and bring some kind of broker some kind of accord between the Congolese government and the M23, and of course, Qataris they have economic interests not just in the Congo but in Africa. Just recently, they've laid out a $100 billion investment package that they're going to pursue on the African continent. The largest portion of that, the $21 billion, be going to investments in the Congo. So here again, we see the business element being the taking priority and really revealing what the maneuvers are all about. And it's about business, it's about investment that ultimately would benefit the local elites in Kinshasa, where they get the crumbs. And then, of course, the major corporations and the sovereign wealth funds that are out there, like as in the case of Qatar.
And it's interesting you mentioned Qatar's involvement in Rwanda. And also we sort of discussed that a bit with Kambale Musavuli in right. June. And it's interesting that Rwanda has almost gotten, they're getting out of this agreement. They're getting validation for processing and things like that, because there's also the issue of the EU's mineral agreement with Rwanda, the European Union agreement with Rwanda. And hence, this comes back to our beginning of the conversation of the financial tentacles at the World Bank IMF discussion and that's taking place this week in the annual meetings and the situation in the DRC. Is that also, I mean, do you see also that it's so much heavily in favor of the economic development part of the agreement so heavily weighed for Rwanda?
Yeah, not only is it heavily weighed for Rwanda, just in terms of the potential for investments, but as a result of the deal and Rwanda, the pressure lifting off of Rwanda, we see that, for example, Rwanda's bond rating, by the Standard and Poor's and S&P Global, Fitch, a number of these institutions has increased since the deal. Right, before the signing of the agreement, their bond rating was negative, and now the outlook on Rwanda is positive. We see a pressure lift off of them, where before you had pressure from sports teams that they had sponsorship with in Europe, like Arsenal and Bayern out of Germany and PG Saint-Germain out of France. You see that since the deal, you had the World Cycling event being held in a World Cycling Championship being held in Rwanda. Rwanda entering into deals with the Los Angeles, Los Angeles basketball team, the Clippers, and also the Rams. So Rwanda is benefiting from this on the diplomatic front, on the economic front, and there's no accountability for the crimes that they've committed in the Congo and continue to commit. And of course, the European Union is consistently rewarded Rwanda, no matter how many Congolese die at the hands of Rwanda-backed M23 militia, how much territory Rwanda captures. They've been rewarded with a critical minerals deal with the European Union. The Western establishment, the multilateral institutions, the corporations, the governments, firmly behind Rwanda, in spite of the war crimes, crimes against humanity, atrocities that they've committed in the Congo this year alone. Not to mention for the past three decades. And part of that, Mwiza, I can't put it all in Rwanda. Part of it is a substantial part of it has to do with the leadership in Kinshasa under President Tshisekedi.
You said the leadership in the, oh, sorry, you
in
said
Kinshasa.
In Kinshasa. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, under President Tshisekedi. His leadership has been weak at best, incompetent at worst. You talk to people in the east of the country and they're furious. At him because of the way he's handled this whole situation. It's so hard to wrap one's mind around it. You have a 15-0 unanimous vote at the United Nations that calls on Rwanda to leave the Congo immediately without any preconditions. And yet you don't take advantage of that. You don't rally folks around. You don't build a diplomatic offensive around it. They started to with their foreign minister, the foreign minister of the DRC, Madame Wagner, was very much engaged. But it seems like she's been sidelined. That's the only thing I can explain it. She was very assertive, very articulate, very demanding. Very clear, but all that seems to have been shut down. So the leadership in Kinshasa has been a part of the problem when it comes to having a solid path to peace and stability in the Congo. Unfortunately.
And as you were talking, you mentioned sports teams. If you could unpack to us also this term that's called sports washing. What does it mean, and how is it being applied within the region, in the Great Lakes region of Africa, and the DRC, Rwanda, and other places?
In essence, the gist of it is that you have an authoritarian government that it's got blood on its hands, it's committed crimes, war crimes, crimes against humanity, human rights violations. They go out and seek sponsorship from sports teams, and Rwanda has got a partnership with the National Basketball Association. I mentioned the football teams out of Europe that they're in have sponsorship deals with, the World Cycling Championship. So they enter into these deals to present themselves as a good global citizen. And what's happening is that through their sponsorship deals, they're basically cleansing the crimes that they're committing in Rwanda's case, in the Congo, and even in Rwanda itself. And then it's not just the sports teams, but you have entertainers, you know, Kendrick Lamar and Dave Chappelle and John Legend. They all flock to Rwanda and perform. And Kagame benefits from being seen with them as this decent guy. You know, you know, okay, if you hang with Dave Chappelle and John Legend, you couldn't be killing Africans in the Congo. The two don't jive, and that's the benefit of these sponsorship deals that the Rwandan government enters into. So they call it sports washing, but it's beyond sports. It's sports entertainment, you name it.
And Rwanda is not the only country that does that.
No, especially, no, no.
Especially in the context.
Emirates. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Misa.
Oh no, saying also in the context of Rwanda and also in the other parts of the continent and the other big conflict country in Sudan as well. You've had are you about to say United Arab Emirates? If you can expand on that a bit as well.
Yeah, the Gulf states. United Arab Emirates, even Saudi Arabia, they all enter into deals. Saudi Arabia probably is the most noteworthy, especially after, you know, the atrocious killing of the journalist Khashoggi. They entered into a deal with the Professional Golfers Association actually what they did was create another golf league. I call it the Live League. And that's one of the means of cleansing their image on the international scene by sponsoring, investing in sports teams in an effort to basically cover for the crimes that they commit.
Now, with all this attention, what are people saying about these type of activities? What is the people on the ground? What are the people on the ground in Congo and other parts of the continent dealing with this issue?
Well, you know, we have Congo Week coming up next week, and from October 19th to 25th, which is a global teach-in and action around the Congo, where people from different parts of the world can hear directly from organizers on the front lines, whether they be in the east, front lines of the conflict, or in the north of the country, in the rainforest, in the west, in the peatlands, or in the south, in the mines. And, you know, they're folks on the front lines are saying what the women said, women leaders that we facilitated coming to Washington back in June. They're not included in many of these decisions and discussions. Two, there's lack of transparency around these deals and accords that are being signed. They're saying that they're conditioned, in spite of all the flurry of diplomacy and the talks, things haven't gotten better. They're getting, if not, they're getting worse on the ground. Whether you're talking about as it relates to the conflict, or whether you're talking about as it relates to the social and economic conditions of the masses of Congolese, whether you're talking about as it relates to the preservation of the rainforest and the Congo Basin, where indigenous communities live and depend on the rainforest. So that's the message that's coming from local communities, that they're not taken into consideration. Their concerns are not being addressed. So that's why it's so important for people throughout the globe to rally in support, in solidarity with the Congolese people, because their elites, the elites that function really as a comprador class, are beholden to foreign interests, beholden to foreign finance capital. And it's The Congolese people are in need of that kind of solidarity with so many forces arrayed against them. You have the multilateral institutions, World Bank, we're talking about, IMF. You have corporations, you have the foreign governments. And then, of course, there are the neighboring countries, Rwanda and Uganda, and their leadership. And then you have in tow, in cahoots, the local elites. So the odds are stacked against them. But we believe that with the people's support globally, amplifying their stories, providing avenues for them to articulate their concerns, providing an alternative narrative for, because the government officials, they have access. They can come to Washington anytime they want. They have a particular narrative. And that narrative is in direct contradistinction with the narrative of the local communities, the indigenous communities. So it's so key for us to amplify their stories. That's why WPFW is so important, especially here in Washington, D.C., where next week on the 22nd of October, PFW is going to run an entire day providing the voices from the Congo. So people, policymakers here, the average people here, government officials here can hear directly from Congolese on the ground, on the front lines that they don't normally have access to.
Again, that's Maurice Carney, who's the executive director of Friends of the Congo, and is discussing with us the what's happening on the ground in Congo, particularly the issue of sports washing, and also what Congolese are saying and doing. And as he noted there, he stressed the importance of your community station, WPFW, in that effort of amplifying those voices. Katia, isn't that right?
That is certainly very right, Mwiza. You know, this is why we do the work we do. This is also the reason we can do the work we do, because of listeners like you, member supporters, or listeners who've decided to become member supporters. We cannot do this work without you. And as Maurice mentioned in that interview, next Wednesday, we'll be doing our second annual Congo Day on WPFW and bringing you the voices of not only those on this side who are advocating for Congo and trying to change the paradigm, trying to free Congo, but also those in the DRC actually mobilizing and organizing, because the answer will come and the liberation will come from those on the ground most affected. And so we will be bringing those voices to you as well next Wednesday from 5 a.m. until midnight. So just another reason to support the excellent work of Africa Now today, bringing you the voice of Maurice Carney, but really giving you context, history, all the things you need to understand why Africa at large, the continent, many, many, many countries are in the conditions that they're in, but also why we have to have a media outlet that can do more, that can present these voices uninhibited, unencumbered. And we do that because you support us. We ensure that there's a space for Africa Now because you are here supporting us. So we ask you to go to the phones. We still need $400. We can do this together, folks. 800-222-9739, or go online to WPFWFM.org. And we have 17 minutes, Mwiza, to do this. We can do it together.
It can happen. It can happen. It can happen, especially considering the past few times we've gone over, and we like to go over again. This is only 400. I think one person can do the 400. There's some people who can
absolutely
do that.
Absolutely. Or, you know, we have a few people pledging as sustaining members at the 2250. Now I'm getting it confused. I think it's the 2250 level. My math is not great. Giving us 240. And if we have two of those folks, we will indeed exceed the goal. Yeah. And we can do that. We've done it before. And, and people love to wait to the last minute. That's okay. You're in the midst of something else. But before this hour is up, before we hit 2 o'clock, please go to the phones and make that call that makes the difference. 800-222-9739. Follow Isabel and Charles's example, what it looks like and feels like to be a member supporter of WPFW. You can also go online to WPFWFM.org.
Yeah, who happened to be my parents.
Beautiful. Oh, well, your son is magnificent. I know you know that. Magnificent. Like, oh,
okay. And I'm not sure. We can't see the other people that supported us as well, but also join that group. And we'd like to also, we'd like to challenge those of you who've been listening to WPFW. You're already de facto members. Now make it de jure by supporting the station by actually becoming a sustainer. It could be a sustainer for, you know, you could do it for $60 for the whole year. You could do it for $120, depending on what you're able to do. And all of your support is very much welcome. And again,
every dollar.
Sorry.
Every dollar. No, go ahead. I was just saying every dollar, to 5,000 to 50,000. We love it all. We'll take it all. We're grateful for it all.
Yeah, and I just wanted to remind people that we are taking donations on the web as well, wpfwfm.org, on the Donate Now, go scroll down to Africa Now, and also the Cash App, which is the $WPFWFM, and make sure you write that it's for Africa Now. And also the text is, you text 801-801, is that right? Is it 801-801 is the text?
Yes, right.
Or texting as well. So depending on which is your most favorite way of supporting WPFW and other like-minded groups that you support. And as Katia said, who's the program director, and she's our chief here, making sure that we get all these things done. We were able to do this because you have been constantly supporting the station for over 48 years, and you don't get to hear the breadth and scope of issues like what's taking place in the Democratic Republic of Congo, the DRC, unless you tune into our show, Africa Now, and some of my colleagues' shows as well on WPFW throughout the week. So it's a real blessing to have this station here, particularly in these times when there's an effort to erase information and to spin it in a different way that is not really the truth. So this is the station that provides you the voices from on the ground. We've had, you know, journalists from DRC speaking to us directly from Goma and other places, and of course for journalists from South Africa and Colombia, all over the place. We've had people on our show, and that's only possible because of your support. We're going to go back to the conversation, the ending of the conversation with Maurice Carney, expanding on the issues in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Would there also be places where people can hear analysis of what sports washing is? Because the way you laid it out was great, but information?
Yes, we're going to be having a panel discussion in Baltimore at the start of Congo Week Sunday, October 19th. We'll be having a discussion. We have Rwandan brother, folks from Rwanda will be with us from Sudan, and we'll be talking about sports washing there. And that will also be likely be broadcast on our social media handles. People can go to at Congo Friends on X and Instagram and YouTube, and they'll be able to tune in as well. They're live on Sunday, October 19th, starting at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So they can join us in person in Baltimore, or they can catch us online as well.
And I don't know if you have any other closing thoughts as we continue to unpack the situation in the DRC that you'd like to
know about. Yeah, absolutely. Continue to encourage people to stand with the Congolese people, to take a stance that says we refuse to normalize what is unfolding in the Congo, home to the deadliest conflict in the world since World War II. These 6 million people perish, 70 million people living on less than $2.15 a day, 25 million people in need of emergency support, 7 million people internally displaced, hundreds of thousands of women being systematically raped. We cannot normalize that, especially seeing that we all benefit from Congo's minerals that power our devices, from our phone to our cars to computers that we use. And say to people, as we stand with the Congolese people, stand with those institutions here that provide a platform for their voices to be heard. And WPFW is front and center in providing that outlet for Congolese voices. And it's so critical we continue to support WPFW, listener-powered radio station that brings us authentic voices directly from the ground, whether it's in the Congo, other parts of Africa, Haiti, Palestinian resistance voices. So make that appeal to folks to continue to support this truth-telling institution that has been doing this for decades, telling truth to power right here in Washington. So that's so critical. Congo Week is taking place from Sunday, October 19th to Saturday, October the 25th. Events will be held in a range of cities, New York, London, Washington, Paris, Berlin, all over. Folks are going to be doing activity, doing events. They're going to be hosting film screenings and teach-ins and fundraisers and rallies. And they're going to take place in person. Some are going to be hybrid. Some are going to be virtual. And they can go to CongoWeek.org to get access to all of the events. And we have every Congo Week, and we've been doing this for 18 years now. There's a flagship event that occurs in Harlem. We call Congo in Harlem, where we invite Congolese filmmakers and musicians, artists, cultural workers, practitioners to come to Harlem to showcase Congo culture for the week. So Congo in Harlem, for the folks who are in New York or D.C. would like to go up, we'll kick off on Sunday, October 19th as well at the special event at the Africa Center in New York. So they can get all of that information at Congo Week, CongoWeek.org, and they can follow us on our socials at Congo Friends on Instagram and Facebook and X and YouTube to get access to what's going to be unfolding during Congo Week in different parts of the world.
Maurice, thank you very much for being on the show, and also thank you very much for all the work you continue to do together with all the folks in Congo who are trying to build a better world one day at a time.
Thank you. Thank you, Musa.
Again, that's Maurice Carney of Friends of the Congo. And we still have 3 minutes before we go to the news. And then that's followed by Shainana Uzain Alamina. That's followed by Sophie's Parlor. And with me as well is Katia Stitt, the program director at WPFW, to share some closing thoughts.
I just want to, again, encourage people to support that which supports you. I cannot say it enough. Support that which supports you. Africanel supports you in your education around what happens on the continent and throughout the diaspora. WPFW makes space for Congolese voices, Sudanese voices, Palestinian voices, and others. Peoples who are marginalized, who are oppressed, who are forcibly silenced. That is the mission of WPFW. So please, support Africanel and the great work that they do. $400 to go, folks. You can continue to call after the top of the hour if you'd like to support Africanel. You can do so by using that drop-down menu if you're going online to WPFWFM.org. Or if you call, you can say, I want my pledge to be credited to Africanel. It's as simple as that. $400 to go. 800-222-9739. WPFWFM.org are the ways to pledge your support. Mweza, thank you so much for having me and for producing yet another incredible and critical show.
Thank you, Katia, for all the support. And also thank you, our engineers, Michael Nicella and Clea Chapman, and also Africa World Now Project Collective, and James Pope, the executive producer and co-host of Africa Now. Up next is Headline News, followed by Shine Anna with Zain Al-Amin, that's followed by Sophie's Parlor. I'm your host, Muizzo Mtali. Have a great day, have a great week, and stay safe.
Wondering how to get WPFW swag in your life? Items that say, I support jazz and justice without saying a word. We've got you covered. Details and browsing at WPFWFM.org. Again, that's WPFWFM.org.
For WPFW News in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin. Today is Wednesday, October 15th. Here are some headlines. The Supreme Court heard arguments today on a core provision of the Voting Rights Act that is designed to protect racial minorities. The case, a challenge to Louisiana's congressional map, is a battle over whether states can use race as a factor in drawing electoral districts, but it could have much broader implications for politics. Lawyers for Louisiana and the Trump administration tried to persuade the justices to wipe away the state's second majority black congressional district and make it much harder, if not impossible, to take account of race in redistricting. If the judges decide that lawmakers cannot consider race in drafting maps, redistricting could follow. Those changes could allow Republican state legislatures to eliminate at least a dozen Democrat-held House districts across the South. In more news, the Senate is expected to vote for a ninth time today on a House-passed bill that would reopen the government as Democrats and Republicans remain at odds on day 15 of the shutdown. The bill, which would fund the government until November 21, failed to reach the 60 votes needed to advance yesterday, and it is not expected to do so today. Republicans are refusing to negotiate with Democrats over health insurance tax credits that they are seeking to extend. Meanwhile, the White House Office of Management and Budget said in a social media post it was preparing for more layoffs. This comes as a federal judge in San Francisco today will weigh whether to temporarily halt the latest wave of layoffs by the Trump administration. U.S. District Judge Susan Ilston will hear preliminary arguments in a case brought by the American Federation of Government Employees and the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, which together represent more than 800,000 federal workers. And in more news, Israel today kept closed a crucial boarding crossing from Egypt to Gaza and cut in half the amount of aid allowed to enter in retaliation for what it says are delays in the handover of bodies of dead hostages by Hamas. The handover of bodies is central to the U.S.-brokered ceasefire in Gaza. 21 bodies of hostages remain in Gaza, though some may be hard to find or recover because of destruction during the conflict. The deal also requires Israel to return the bodies of 360 Palestinians. The first group of 45 was handed over yesterday, and the bodies were being identified, said Palestinian health authorities. And In more news, the World Meteorological Organization said in its latest bulletin on greenhouse gases that CO2 growth rates have now tripled since the 1960s. Emissions from burning coal, oil, and gas alongside more wildfires have helped fan what it called a vicious climate cycle, as people and industries continue to spew heat-trapping gases while the planet's oceans and forests lose their ability to absorb them. The report said that the increase in the global average concentration of carbon dioxide from 2023